to the Infrastructure Show. I'm your host, Professor Joseph Schoffer of Northwestern University. The Infrastructure Show is designed to present to listeners the reality of America's infrastructure, its condition, why it is the way it is, and what can be done about it. We gratefully acknowledge contributions to sustain the Infrastructure Show from Andrea and Ron DeFeo, Dr. Robert Peskin, and Dr. Raymond Ellis. Clean water is life for people and for businesses. New York City's 8.5 million residents depend on a network of reservoirs and aqueducts to bring the water to meet their needs. Our guest today wrote of that system, "Of all the engineering materials I've seen, no body of civil engineering compares to that accomplished during the building of the New York City water supply system." To learn about the structure and history and current state of New York City water supply, we're talking with Kevin Bone, who is professor and director of the Institute for Sustainable Design at the Irwin S. Chanin School of Architecture at the Cooper Union in New York City. His book, Waterworks, The Architecture and Engineering of the New York Water Supply System, is a history of the freshwater system for New York City. Kevin, I really appreciate your spending the time to talk with us today.
My pleasure to be here.
Can you first give us, for those that haven't had the opportunity to see your book and to understand the system, give us an overview of where New York City gets its fresh water.
New York City's water supply system can be best understood as a three-part system. There is the Croton River watershed, which is east of the Hudson River. This was the original watershed that New York City tapped. It was the nearest reasonable clean river that New York City could use. When that source became stressed, New York City moved west of the Hudson River to the eastern side of the Catskill Mountains. That is called the Catskill System. And when that system became stressed, New York City moved to the western side of the Catskill Mountains. That's called the Delaware System and is at the headwaters of the Delaware River. So we really have a three-component system: the Croton watershed, the Catskill watersheds, and the Delaware watersheds.
And when you talk about the system being stressed, does that mean heavy use or overuse of the available water in those locations?
Well, in this case, it just meant a booming America and a booming New York City and population rates increasing at levels that were not planned for. New York City, throughout its history, was always playing a game of catch-up with regard to water supply. They would plan for 1 million people, and there would be 2 million people, and so on throughout history.
Has it ever been an issue through that history of tensions between the residents of those areas that are supplying the water and New York City?
From the very beginning, there were tensions. Those were farmlands in the Catskill Mountains and in the Croton watersheds. Croton watershed, there was less tension at that point. New York City was a very powerful entity and had a fairly close relationship with Westchester County and the Croton watershed. But when New York City went west of the Hudson to begin to claim those waters, there was a lot of tension. Some of that resentment exists to this day.
Has the resolution been political or financial or a little bit of everything?
A little bit of everything. New York City went into the Catskill Mountains in the 90s with a plan to protect the watersheds from polluting sources. And that required a kind of long-term win-win negotiation with the communities in the Catskills. And to make that win-win viable, it involved financial support for those communities.
So how does that water make its way to New York City?
Well, one of the glories of the system, it is essentially 95% gravity-fed. And in this day and age, when we're concerned about the consumption of fossil fuels, to have a fully gravity-fed water supply system that delivers 1 billion gallons of water a day is a great thing. You look at the energy use statistics of California, and an enormous piece of the pie goes to moving water. Moving water takes a lot of energy. So we have the good fortune of a beautifully designed, primarily gravity-fed system, much like the Romans used.
So is the water in pipes? Is it open channel flow or mixture?
It is all in some sort of aqueduct, either in concrete-lined deep rock tunnels, in steel-lined siphons and various kind of appurtenant infrastructures that support those deep rock tunnels. And in some cases, there are covered aqueducts that are at grade. In no case is it an open channel.
And these date back for, what, 150 years and more, some of them?
Well, the oldest pieces of the system are probably about 130 years at this point. The Catskill aqueducts, which deliver a lot of water to New York City, came online about 1910. the Delaware aqueducts, which deliver a lot of water to New York City, came online as late as the 50s and the 60s.
And can you give us a sense of the scale of these, the typical diameters?
Well, the scale is monumental. I mean, when people talk about the marvels of the Roman aqueducts, for example, the entire assemblage of Roman imperial aqueduct system that supplied old Rome maybe brought 25 million gallons of water a day, and that was a combination of seven aqueducts. New York City's aqueducts can handle 1.3 billion gallons of water a day. And to do that, you're delivering them in high-pressure tunnels that are up to a diameter of 20 feet. So these are really impressive, monumental engineering works.
Very large scale. And you said some of them are in deep tunnels?
Some of them are in deep rock tunnels, 600 feet below the surface, which was, even to this day, with the ongoing construction of City Tunnel Number 3, that's being done at depths of 600 feet below the skyscrapers of Manhattan.
So I want to get into talking about that a little bit, but stick with the history. Some of the very oldest deep rock tunnels, I would assume, were well predated tunnel boring machines.
Correct. They blasted those out through a dangerous, labor-intensive process of drilling and setting dynamite at the head of the shaft and at the head of the tunnel and inching it along day by day. Yes, much of the Catskill tunneling, and for that matter, a lot of the Delaware tunnel, all predated tunnel boring machinery.
So what's the current state of that infrastructure right now? I know there are many pieces to it, but can you make a general statement about that?
I would say, as a generalization, the New York City water supply system is in pretty good shape. New York City has been vigilant over the years in maintaining it. That being said, there are some areas that need attention. There is an area in the Delaware Aqueduct in a deep rock environment that they are planning for a partial reconstruction of, which requires building a bypass tunnel in the area to be reconstructed. The Schoharie Reservoir and dam structure has some problems in its spillway that I'm aware of. And of course, the local laterals and risers and distribution network in New York City is an aging part of the system, and there's hundreds of miles of that, so that is bit by bit being improved and upgraded. But I would say, in general, it is in pretty good condition.
So you said something that really caught my attention, and this notion of the need to build a bypass. When I think about it, it certainly makes sense, because you have basically a network with single links between nodes, and if you want to repair something, you've got to take it out of service, but you need the water to flow. So the bypass seems essential. Some redundancy seems essential.
Yes. I mean, that's one of the things that the New York City water supply system did not really have, is redundancy. And even building the bypass tunnel has its own complications, because one doesn't just turn off an aqueduct. The dewatering of an aqueduct is a monumental process. This is something that has been under high pressure since it was first watered. So we're talking about 600 pounds per square inch. So once that pressure no longer exists inside those concrete-lined tunnels, there's fear that some of the concrete might break apart and come off of the rock structure. And then the whole diversion of that is, it's big engineering.
So it sounds to me like a project where it may be really hard to assess the scale and scope of it in advance, because you don't know what you're going to see when you open it up.
That's right. You know, they spent years studying these aqueducts in preparation for this bypass, including a special submersible that was designed up at Woods Hole Laboratory that would be sent down this aqueduct. So this is rapidly moving water at, as I said, 600 pounds per square inch pressure, complete darkness, and to send a kind of device down there that had various instruments on it for detecting possible deficiencies in the tunnel wall. That went on for years, that kind of investigative study. So even the determination of problems is complex.
Yes, but the application of robotic technology seems to make a lot of sense here. So who has overall responsibility for this system?
The New York City Department of Environmental Protection.
Okay, so they're the water supply agency for the city?
Correct. They are responsible for water supply, they are responsible for wastewater treatment, and they are responsible for the environment of New York City.
So it's a very heavy responsibility. One of the things that occurs to me is that it's all below the surface, and the only contact people have with it on a day-to-day basis is they turn the faucet on and expect clean water.
That's correct. You know, in my teachings at Cooper Union, I often ask students if they know where the water comes from, and many don't. These are highly educated young people, and it goes to show that in many cases we are detached from the resource streams that supply us with our day-to-day needs, whether it is water, whether we understand where our food comes from, whether we understand where our energy is coming from, and what the implications are down those resource streams to larger questions of environment and sustainability.
So one of the implications of not understanding the source of the resources is it's hard for people to make decisions or take logical positions about the investments in those resource systems and support for them going forward.
Yes, that's correct. In order for society to be well prepared to invest in infrastructure, I think it's important that they understand what it takes to bring clean water to 8.5 million people. Really, it's more like 10 million people because there's various outlying communities that are also beneficiaries of the New York City water supply system. I think for people to understand that society, year in and year out, regardless of tax flows, regardless of the economic climate in the country, regardless of political inclinations about government spending or not spending, to invest in these things and consistently invest in them for 175 years, New York City is planning for water in the year 2100. And that's a great thing to me. That gives me great hope to see that society thinks that way. And we need to really think that way on a broader scale. Otherwise, we end up with the Flint, Michigan stories and so on and so on. It always costs more, I think, in the end to be dealing with a crisis rather than to plan ahead.
I think it's hard for people to understand that. And my sense is, particularly when you talk about clean water in a big city, it's never been an issue, so why should I worry about it? But it will be an issue, and it is an ongoing issue.
Correct. And it will become a more complex issue as time goes on. New York City, I should point out, is the largest urban water supply in the United States that has a filtration avoidance agreement with the federal government. And that's because we do so much to protect water quality at the source. It is much more economical to protect the water quality at the source than to have to clean the water up downstream.
So what you're saying is there's a very low level of treatment that's necessary to make the water safe.
Correct.
So take us back to water tunnel number 3. Where is it and what does it do and what are the challenges it faces?
Well, water tunnel number 3 is really a name for a series of tunnels that are providing some degree of redundancy for the main urban aqueducts in and around New York City. So what they call City Tunnel Number 1 and City Tunnel Number 2 have been online and continuously pressurized for almost 100 years. So our opportunity to shut those down, service them, and maintain them is in large part dependent upon a new network of distribution around the city of New York. And the City Tunnel Number 3 also includes kind of master valve chambers where water can be moved from one set of major arteries to another set of arteries. So the whole network of the core urban water structure, not the collection in the mountains, but the core urban water distribution is what City Tunnel Number 3 is about, to provide us that redundancy and also, frankly, to allow for future growth when people were looking back in the 60s and 70s and thinking, all right, we're going to add a lot of people to Manhattan. We're going to add a lot of skyscrapers. We're going to add a lot of businesses. In order for that to be done well, one needs good infrastructure. And I think we all can tip our hats to Mayor Bloomberg for his solid commitment to continued pressure to get the components of City Tunnel Number 3 as advanced as possible during his administration. Because it helps to have good water if you're going to continue to rely on real estate development as a mode of growing the city.
So, as I understand it, Tunnel Number 3 goes through the Bronx, it goes through Manhattan, it goes over to Brooklyn. So it affects a large geographic area of the city.
Yes, there are really many tunnels that share the name Tunnel Number 3. There is a Lower Manhattan branch. There's a Roosevelt Island branch. There's networks of it. It's really a new urban aqueduct system. And even though it's called City Tunnel Number 3, there are multiple tunnels involved.
Now, some of this is built and in service, is that correct?
Parts of it are built and in service, and parts of it are still under construction, and I think we probably have another 15 years or something before it's 100% online.
But when it's 100% online, then it opens up the opportunity to do serious maintenance on some of the parallel tunnels.
That is the plan.
Okay. And at the same time, is it needed to supply water in addition to what the tunnels that are in place and functioning?
Yes, and I think it also gives the water managers flexibility. And let's say there would be a failure in one of the older city tunnels that gives them the flexibility to move water to other portions of the city through other means. They really have a much more sophisticated switching terminal, if you will, that will allow the movement of water through alternate routes in the event of failure in one part of the system.
And the name itself is a reminder that this is not some residential service pipes, that this is a very large diameter system that becomes a huge part of the network.
Yes. This is also, not to overuse the term, but this is monumental engineering. I've had the privilege of being down in these chambers and in these tunnels under construction, and these are incredible engineers, incredible builders, working day in and day out on very difficult construction problems, often life-threatening, to make our city better in the future.
On the one hand, something that's a support system for life, but also invisible. It's below ground, and we don't hear much about it.
Correct.
So are there lessons that you can see from what's going on in New York, and we can go back 150 years, you not personally, but in the work that you've done and you've looked at for other cities, things that we should be paying attention to in terms of water supply and in terms of infrastructure in general?
I am a strong believer that society should invest in infrastructure. To me, that is a core component of civilization. And in our ongoing daily debates about government and government spending, I would remind people that the New York City water supply is government spending. And because of that, and because we've kept it in public hands, this is a very important message also, we've been very vigilant about keeping New York City's water supply in public hands. Mayor Giuliani contemplated selling the system to close some budget gaps. But because we've kept it in public hands, and because we've taken reasonably good care of the system, we have a good, clean product that is affordable. And I think that that lesson is really important, that you can't just wave a wand and solve a water supply system problem in a given area. It takes long-term planning and long-term commitment. And there are projects that outlast administrations. There are projects that outlast funding cycles. And it's very important that society be willing to make that long-term commitment to the infrastructure, whether it's bridges, whether it's highways, whether it's water tunnels, whether it's our electric grid, because at the end, when these things fail, it's much more costly, and the costs ripple through society through productivity and lost opportunity.
And I think because they've been so reliable up to this point, people really don't expect the possibility of failure. But it says we need to be ready, and we need to have the redundancy and to make the investment to sustain the systems.
Yes, I think that's well said and very important.
Professor Bowen, I really appreciate your talking to us this morning. It's been most interesting. I found your book particularly enjoyable, and I hope others have the chance to look at it. We'll put a link to it on our website. Thanks very much for talking with us.
I thank you very much, and we appreciate that you're doing your best to continue the conversation about infrastructure to the American audience. Thank you so much.
Glad we can work together on it. Thank you.